Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia, beaming out to you on the 19th of June, 2013. Welcome wherever you may be. My name's Hereward Fenton, and Truth News Radio Australia brings you news without the spin, and we penetrate deep into the core of the lie, and we try to show you the lie from the inside, the big lie. We're not so much concerned with the little lies, which the mainstream media constantly distracts you with, although the small peccadilloes of the ruling powers, and they try to give the impression that they are actually doing research and doing investigative journalism when they dig up their little stories to titillate your imagination. But in doing so, they continually ignore the elephant in the room, which is the big lie. And it seems that it is up to the smaller, one might call, fringe media agencies such as this one to address the big lies, to point out that the emperor has no clothes, when in fact the various anointed ones who are there to provide information do not do it. Now, in today's show, I've got in the second hour, I've got Josh Jackson, a regular commentator on the show, coming on for the full hour in the second hour, and we're going to be discussing the question of privacy. What is privacy? Can we expect privacy in the modern world? And of course, this is in the wake of the huge news last week of the revelations of Edward Snowden and the PRISM NSA surveillance program. I've had a lot of questions sort of revolving in my mind about privacy in essence. Is privacy to be considered an inalienable right? And I'm not even sure that the answer to that is an unequivocal yes. I don't know whether, in fact, I am entitled to privacy. I mean, there are certain things about my life that I do wish to keep private. But I know that with advances in technology, it is getting easier and easier for people to find out things about you because of the channels of communication we use and because of the way we live in a densely populated world where everything's interconnected. Of course, you can still whisper in someone's ear. And, am I proposing that we can't whisper in someone's ear anymore? Well, I hope not. I hope we can. But then again, surveillance devices are everywhere. And as it's been pointed out many times before, mobile phones can be used as surveillance devices. There are ways of hacking into mobile phones to get the microphone to actually come on when you aren't even using it. And I've been through those stories and I've confirmed that they're real. So in fact, even something like whispering in someone's ear may not even be totally private anymore when we consider all the electronic gadgets with potential surveillance capabilities that are surrounding us at all times. And then if we're going to actually ask the question about, well, you know, if we think it's wrong, what do we do about it? Then are we saying, well, there have to be laws in place to stop people from doing this? But then again, you see, that becomes, again, the heavy hand of the state, doesn't it? Once we talk about laws to protect people's privacy, we're actually invoking, in one sense, the very thing we're trying to free ourselves of, which is the heavy hand of the state. That's why I think it's a very interesting question to explore in more detail. So I'll be going through that with Josh in the second hour, but in the first hour I actually want to return to the Snowden topic, and I want to look at some of the other information that's been popping up in relation to NSA and whistleblowers. And I actually have a video here from NSA whistleblower William Binney, and this was from an interview on RT. And he's being asked here about the very, very question we're going to be addressing later in the show about privacy. And this is a really interesting interview, and it was conducted in December of 2012. But it actually shows that a lot of the information which was supposedly revealed for the first time there by Edward Snowden has been around for a while. Let me just give you a listen to this interview and see what you think. He's responding here to a question about privacy, and the interviewer, I think Marina Portnaya, asked him, can we actually expect to have privacy at all in the world in which we currently live?
Well, yes, that's what I've been basically saying for quite some time, is that the FBI has access to the data collected, which is basically the emails of virtually everybody in the country, and they have the FBI has access to it. All the congressional members are on the surveillance too. It's not, no one's excluded. They're all included. So yes, this can happen to anyone if they become a target for whatever reason. If they are targeted by the government can go in, or the FBI or other agencies of the government can go into that database, pull all that data they've collected over them, on them over the years, and reanalyze it all. So retroactively analyze everything they've done over the last 10 years at least.
And it's not just about those who could be planning, who could be a threat to national security, but also those who could be just...
It's everybody. I thought the NARIS device simply takes in the entire line, so it takes all the data. In fact, they advertise. The way they advertise, they they can process the lines at session rates, which means 10 gigabit lines. That's the NARIS, not the STA-6400, but the, I forget the name of it. There's another device that they have that does that, but it does it at 10 gigabits. That's why they're building Bluffdale, because they have to have more storage because they can't figure out what's important, so they're just storing everything there. So all that email is going to be stored there for the future, but right now it's stored in different places around the country. But it is being collected and FBI has access to it.
You mean it's being collected in bulk without even requesting the providers? And then what about Google, you know, releasing this biannual transparency report and saying that the government's demands for personal data is at an all-time high, and for all of those requests in the U.S., Google says they complied with the government's demands 90% of the time. But they're still saying that they're making the requests. It's not like... it's all being funneled into that storage. What do you say to that?
Well, I would assume that that's just simply another source of the same data they're already collecting. Mark Klein, in his declarations in the court about the AT&T facility in San Francisco, documented the NSA room inside that AT&T facility where they had NARIS devices to collect data off the fiber optic lines inside the United States. So that's kind of a powerful device that would collect everything that was being sent. It could collect on the order of over 100 billion 1,000-character emails a day, one device. So that gives you an idea of the magnitude of the kind of collection that's going on.
Well, you're saying they sift through, those are billions of emails.
Yep.
I wonder... how do they prioritize? I mean, is it like foreign nationals first? How do they prioritize? How do they filter it?
I don't think there... well, first of all, I don't think there's any filtering. They're just going to store it all, okay? So then it's just a matter of selecting it when you want it. So if they wanted to target you, they would take your attributes and go into that database and pull out all your data.
That's what I was going to ask. Are they reading my Gmail? I don't know. I should say there is no Afghanistan general in my mailbox.
Okay, a really interesting point about the surveillance that William Binney is making here is that they accumulate all of your data, right, or everybody's data, and it sits there in a vast database. And then if you become of interest to them, if you become a person of interest to them for any reason... they can then go in to their database and find out information about you. And this is something that Edward Snowden alluded to in his interview, which is that this becomes a tool for oppression. It becomes a tool for persecution. It becomes turnkey tyranny. And this is the real danger. This is the real fear, you see, because in a full-blown tyrannical totalitarian system, opposition has to be eliminated. Dissent has to be eliminated. Now, if you have vast databases of information on all of your citizens, as soon as someone pops up that you don't like, for whatever reason, doesn't have to be because they immediately become a suspect in a criminal investigation, you might not like them for a variety of reasons. You can then probe into them to see, hey, is there any dirt we can find on this person to silence, neutralize, or discredit this person? And what I find incredible is the lack of discussion of this aspect of the use of surveillance to basically target people, to basically accumulate information so that you can then target people you don't like later on whenever you feel like it. And just as with torture, as we've seen, is that torture is used mainly as a mechanism to extract confessions to make the government look successful, powerful, and omniscient, in that you extract information from people under duress. And of course, the information you get may be completely bogus, but it makes the government look powerful. Again, similarly with this type of information, if they dig into some history of a person and pull up something that looks a little bit odd or a little bit compromising, it makes them look powerful, doesn't it? Of course, everyone's got things in their background which make them feel embarrassed and could be a little compromising. Nobody's perfect in this world, right? But, you know, it's so obvious that this is a tool of political oppression. And I see no discussion of that in the mainstream. Zero discussion of that. Of course, the powers that be will tell you that that gathering this information is for this wonderful purpose of keeping you safe and protecting you, in that somehow it's going to aid them to find the person who might be committing a crime or about to commit a crime, right? But think about it. How does it do that? The main use of this is that once you've already identified someone that you suspect for whatever reason, maybe you just don't like them, you can then go in and find out information about them. So it doesn't actually help you find the bad guy at all. It helps you nail the bad guy to the wall. But that is a very important distinction, isn't it? Because the real investigative work, the real work that allows you to go out there and find someone who did something bad, is what they claim that they're doing. So I just think that's a really important point to emphasize. And it's also very interesting to note that, and if you listen to the whole interview here with William Binney, the information about the NSA, not exactly the same as the PRISM program, but information about the amount of vast amounts of data that the NSA is collecting has been around for a long time. So Edward Snowden's revelations are in no way unusual. They are significant and they are different. I mean, the PRISM program itself had not been exposed. When we come back from break, I'm actually going to explore some other takes on the Snowden affair, and I'm going to read to you from a rather surprising article by Naomi Wolf, who suggests that maybe Edward Snowden is not who we've been led to believe. We'll be right back after the break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us. Part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow lower life, throwing strife into the mix.
Hi, welcome back. You with Truth News Radio. Do check us out on the internet if you can. Come to truthnews.com.au. Subscribe to our podcast. Have a look at the articles that are up there. Every show comes with a little article that summarizes its content and any relevant links. And I also put it up on Facebook and do encourage you to comment and discuss. And if you have any questions or criticisms of what I've said, let me know. And quite often listeners to this show do contact me with various ideas, and I put those on the show, and sometimes I get listeners on the show to have a chat if there's something particularly interesting on their mind that they'd like to talk about. Unfortunately, our shows are not going out live currently due to a resourcing problem at Logos Radio Network. Unfortunately, there is no producer available for the show, and the producer is an extremely important role. The producer fields calls, prepares people to come on the show, and also monitors the calls as they're coming in. Now, unfortunately, we don't have anyone to do that. It is a slightly technical role. It requires a little bit of software to be installed, but it can actually be done from a remote location. It's not something that needs to be done in the studio there at Logos Radio Network, which is brilliant that they've established a system that can work in a remote way like that, in a distributed way. If there's anyone listening who would be interested in taking on the role of producer for this show, please do get in touch with me. Send me an email to editor@truthnews.com.au, or just visit the site and use the contact options there. And we'll talk it through. I would love to have your help. I would love to start doing the live shows again. Unfortunately, these are currently pre-recorded. Now, just getting back to our story here of NSA leaker Edward Snowden. Now, I'm going to read to you an article which was posted by Naomi Wolf on her Facebook blog. Now, I don't subscribe to the views that Naomi's putting forth here. I think they're interesting, unusual in the sense that the line she's taking is a somewhat conspiratorial one. Many of the comments on her blog have suggested that she sounds like Alex Jones, which is sort of quite funny because, I mean, you know, she's a classic left-wing feminist. I mean, her latest book is titled Vagina. Sorry if that offends listeners, but, I mean, it's just a technical term. That is actually the title of her book, and very interesting by the looks of it, but she is certainly a feminist. There's no doubt about it, and she's very interested in the empowerment of women. And certainly has a left-wing support network out there that's quite intense. She's taken an unusual angle in relation to the Edward Snowden story. The article that she's published has the title, "My Creeping Concern That the NSA Leaker Is Not Who He Purports to Be." And then she published a follow-up to that titled "Some Aspects of Snowden's Presentation That I Find Worth Further Inquiry." So let me just read to you from what she wrote here on June 15, 2013. "I hate to do this, but I feel obligated to share, as the story unfolds, my creeping concern that the NSA leaker is not who he purports to be, and that the motivations involved in the story may be more complex than they appear to be. This is in no way to detract from the great courage of Glenn Greenwald in reporting the story, and the gutsiness of The Guardian in showcasing this kind of reporting, which is a service to America that US media is not performing at all. It is just to raise some cautions as the story unfolds, and to raise some questions about how it is unfolding, based on my experience with high-level political messaging. Some of Snowden's emphases seem to serve an intelligence-slash-police-state objective rather than to challenge them." And she goes through a number of points here that, that as she says, emphasize an intelligence-police-state objective. First of all, she says he is super organized for a whistleblower. And she talks here about the interview quality of the video, the shoot, the way he looked, his general demeanor, extremely polished, and very good talking points. And she's also concerned about the way in which Snowden conveys his message. He's not struggling for words, he's not even thinking hard, and he appears to be transmitting whole paragraphs smoothly without stumbling. To me, this reads as someone who has learned his talking points. Another point she makes is that he says things like, if you are a journalist and they think you are the transmission point of this info, they will certainly kill you. Or, I fully expect to be persecuted or prosecuted under the Espionage Act. He keeps stressing what he will lose, his $200,000 salary, his girlfriend, his house in Hawaii. These are the kinds of messages that the police state would like journalists to take. A real whistleblower does not put out potential legal penalties as options, and almost always by this point has a lawyer by his side who would prohibit him from saying, come and get me, under the Espionage Act. She goes on to say, it is in the police state's interests to let everyone know that everything you write or say is being surveilled, and that awful things happen to people who challenge this, which is why I'm not surprised that now he is on UK no-fly lists. In stories that intelligence services are advancing, there are great sexy or sex-related mediagenic visuals that keep being dropped in to keep media focus on the issue. That very pretty pole-dancing Facebooking girlfriend who appeared for no reason in the media coverage. Snowden is in Hong Kong, which has close ties to the UK, which has done the US's bidding with other famous leakers such as Assange. So there are many other countries that he would be less likely to be handed over from. Now, there's more detail here, but that just gives you a general gist of what Naomi is suggesting. She's written a follow-up to that. There was a huge avalanche of comments to this article. A lot of people are quite offended that she's taken this position. And as I said before, they're saying that she sounds like Alex Jones. Well, you know, that's an insult, but, you know, the fact is, kudos to Alex Jones for looking under the lid and asking difficult questions. I do have some concerns for purely baseless accusations that are merely guesses or merely blue sky speculations. And that, in a sense, is what she is doing here. That's why I'm not totally endorsing what she's saying. But on the other hand, I do feel it's important. But I just give it with the caveat that I certainly don't know. But I think we owe it to ourselves to look at all possibilities in the case of something like Snowden. I think it's interesting that after more than 10 days, I'm trying to actually place when was the original outing of Edward Snowden. It was about 10 days ago. There has been no charges. There's been no extradition request, and we've heard nothing more from Edward Snowden. That's a little peculiar, considering the media furore around his revelations and the apparently very black and white case that he's broken laws. If he'd admitted to, say, killing someone, surely there wouldn't have been much delay in issuing an arrest warrant. I don't know, I'm not a legal expert, but I think this this strange pause in any formal statement or extradition requests from the US government, from the State Department, is a little bit odd. But no doubt we'll hear more about this in the future. But I do encourage you to check out Naomi Wolf. She's a very interesting woman, an original thinker who crosses the divide between left and right. And you got to like that, you got to respect that. In a world just so dominated by strict sort of groupthink in many organisations. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
man is so unjust. Children, yeah, don't know who to trust. Your worst enemy could be your best friend, and your best friend your worst enemy.
Welcome back to the show. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. I'd like to move on with some other stories now. I've got a trailer here for a new film titled State of Mind, and this film was produced by the team who made A Noble Lie, the incredibly brilliant, I have to say, documentary about the Oklahoma bombing. The film was made by a team based in Oklahoma City, and one of them, Chris Emery, is a good friend of mine and has been on the show a number of times. And I really respect what Chris and the team there have done. And I hope to do some interviews with Chris and James Lane and the other guys involved. They've done really great work, I believe, again, looking at a really, really interesting topic, well, really disturbing topic about mind control. Now, just reading the summary here from IMDb, State of Mind, the Psychology of Control. Are we controlled? To what extent and by whom? What does it mean for humanity's future? The enormous implications of these questions deter most of us who must deal with the daily consequences of the answers. State of Mind digs deeply into the sources to reveal that much of that which we believe to be truth has been deception, deliberately implanted into our consciousness to erect a tyranny over the minds of men. From cradle to grave, our parents, peers, institutions, and society inform our values and behaviors. But this process has been hijacked. State of Mind examines the science that has evolved over generations to keep us firmly in place and maintain the status quo so that dictators, power brokers, and corporate puppeteers may profit from our ignorance and slavery. Now let me just play to you a little clip from the trailer here, which has just been released.
Are we choosing our own paths, our own destiny, or has it been pre-selected for us?
C.S. Lewis said, when training beats education, civilization dies.
We need to always be cognizant of, as a free society, that information can be used as a weapon.
Barrier to discovery is not ignorance. It's the illusion of knowledge.
We are seen as nothing but biological androids.
To gain control of education in America, not for a philanthropic purpose, but to change the thinking of the American people.
From the time we're very young, we're taught to, you know, worship authority, basically, because that's our key to survival as young children.
Discover the history, the present, and the future of mind control. From compulsory state education to the Hollywood media brainwashing machine, we are kept in perpetual bondage to the ideas that shape our actions.
In the CIA, scientists could actually film people who had been surreptitiously dosed with LSD.
There's a brain entrainment process that takes place.
That gives the government free rein to create whatever story or narrative it wants to create.
Whatever the public face of something is, whatever they're talking about publicly, there's something else over here they're probably not looking at.
How to engineer the opinion of the American people so that they would fully endorse, not only endorse, but demand a war.
When you watch mainline establishment television, you are putting yourself in front of the barrel of a gun.
Discover the history, the present, and the future of mind control, psychological warfare.
We'll just leave it there. Looks like a really interesting documentary. I'll certainly be getting that one. And hopefully there'll be some good screenings of that about the place. Hopefully we can organise a screening for that in Sydney. It's been a while since we've done any films. Truth News and various friends and groups in Sydney, we were involved in screening a number of really interesting movies there in Sydney back in 2009, 2010. But with everyone being so busy, it's often hard to get these things off the ground. But it's great to see original work being done, and believe me, it's not easy. It's very, very difficult, and it's very difficult to get the funding. But what's actually happened here with this team is they did such great work with the film about the Oklahoma bombing that they really positioned themselves as professional filmmakers. And I believe that substantial money was raised for this new documentary. Now, moving on with other stories, I've got an interesting video here, which I'd like to play a little bit for you. This is back on the topic of Bilderberg. Quite an unusual development in that the Bilderberg group and the Bilderberg meeting has actually been discussed in the House of Commons in London. Now, to my mind, this is the first time there's ever been a serious discussion about the Bilderberg group in any parliamentary context. And it's actually quite long. It goes on for a while. I'm not going to play you the whole thing. I'll play you a little bit of it. It's quite incredible, actually, to listen to. The quality of the behaviour of the MPs is shocking. I mean, they're incredibly childlike, incredibly adolescent. There's a lot of jeering. There's a lot of giggling. They're just carrying on like idiots as a result of Michael Meach's question in Question Time about the Bilderberg meeting and directly to members of the House who attended. And he's simply asking that they give an account of what the heck was going on and why they were there, which is a perfectly important and legitimate question. But you know what it suggests to me, listening to this? It suggests to me that these people, these parliamentarians, are not in any sense the people who are running our country. It makes them come across as somewhat clowns, and they don't even know how to deal with this blatant, in-your-face evidence that there is actually a shadow government, that there is actually a power elite that meets in secret and doesn't give a toss about them, right? It basically makes them look like fools, and in being exposed as fools, they have no way of dealing with it. They just act like idiots. They just giggle. They laugh. They carry on like schoolboys. It's quite fascinating from a psychological point of view. From the point of view of what it tells us about the state of the world, it's horrifying, but I think it's important. So let me just play to you a little bit from the clip here from MPs discussing Bilderberg in the House of Commons.
As an urgent question, I rise to ask the Chancellor of the Exchequer to now make a statement on the Bilderberg conference which he attended.
Mr. Speaker, this is the first occasion for me, as I've never previously answered a question in the House of Commons on behalf of a private organisation for which the government has no responsibility. I have actually been a member of the steering committee of Bilderberg for many years now, I think about 10 years, and by chance actually this is my last year because we have a rule against being on the committee for too long, so I'm on the point of stepping down. Others are timeless with no rules at all, but this particular role I have now reached the end of my allotted span. The Bilderberg organisation exists for the purpose of holding meetings once a year in various countries. It exists for no other purpose. This year the meeting was held at a large hotel near Watford in Hertfordshire. I didn't receive adequate notice of this question as it happened, because I wasn't found in time, to put to hand the list of those who participated and the agenda which we discussed, but we always circulate those before the meeting, and they're readily available, and I can certainly put any honourable member in touch with a source of the list of those who took part. Each year we invite something over 100 people, it was about 140 this year, drawn from both sides of the Atlantic, from Europe, including Turkey, and from the United States and Canada. The people who attend are drawn from the worlds of government, politics, academia, defence, journalism, We all attend in an... The people who attend change slightly each year. There's a core of those who regularly attend. Different people come. Well, I'm trying to guess at what on earth people are asking a parliamentary question about before and what they're interested in. All the people who attend as individuals. We invite people as individuals. Nobody attends representing any particular organisation to which they might belong. And a very interesting two or three days take place in which we have discussions on matters of public affairs. There's a very wide range of experience.
I'll just leave it there. Ladies and gentlemen, you're quite entitled to be absolutely disgusted by this blatant cover-up, treating this as if it's nothing, as if it's just a private meeting, as if it's not important, and as if taxpayer money isn't going towards paying for these elitists to get together to talk about who knows what. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And we were just playing you at the end of our segment there a clip of MPs discussing Bilderberg in the House of Commons, although disgust is probably a too grand a term for what they were doing. They were jeering, laughing, carrying on, treating it like a joke. Michael Meacher, of course, one of the rare principled politicians in government. You know, there are some people with principles. There are people who are real, who are genuine. Generally, they get squeezed out. Generally, they become eliminated from the system. But there are a few in there. And the fact that we see one decent man in there is enough to destroy the image. You see, that's why they're very keen on getting rid of people like Michael Meacher, because he makes them all look really bad. Because we have to assume that he is a good and honourable person, don't we? He was elected. He is a sitting member. And he is equally valid as all of the other people there to have questions and statements. Now, of course, when the average member of the public comes forward with these types of questions, you're treated like a complete fool, like a complete idiot. You know nothing. You're just a conspiracy theorist. You're a fringe nutbag. Just go away. You're embarrassing. Oh, right? Well, they can't actually do that when a member of parliament asks the question. And this video here, it goes on for about 20 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, The person concerned who's being addressed here, I don't know his name, but he's basically saying, look, it's just a private meeting. And, well, I don't know why you're asking me about a private meeting. A private meeting that was attended by the Prime Minister and the top leading people from business and politics all around the world? I mean, that's like the G8, isn't it? Or the G20. And, of course, we expect those types of meetings to be reported on. Another thing that I find incredible, it's completely ignored in the media, is the funding of this, right? Because when heads of state, when politicians attend these meetings, who foots the bill? Well, it's the taxpayer that foots the bill. So that should, at the very least, be a scandal. It should be a money scandal that the public is paying for these private meetings. And what goes on at the private meetings? Maybe they've got prostitutes there. How do we know? How do we know what they're doing? It might be some giant sex party for all we know. I mean, it's just the deliberate misrepresentation, putting into your mind, as we highlighted there in the trailer for A State of Mind about mind control, it's actually telling you that black is white, telling you that something is other than what it is, smacking you in the face and telling you that everything's fine. This is going on continuously. It's abuse. You're being mentally abused. I do encourage you to actually play that video of the Bilderberg discussion in the House of Commons, just to see how low these people have sunk. And again, to illustrate the point that these people who are supposedly running the country are nothing more than clowns. They've been put there as a distraction. And here they are confronted with real evidence of people who are really running the world. And their clownish nature is so evident. That's why I think it's valuable. That's why I think it's really, it's precious. And we should keep this video, because it actually illustrates to us the clown-like nature of our joke democracy. Now, moving on with a little more news here from Australia. Again, on our favourite topic this year and for many years running, vaccination and the war on vaccine skeptics. I've got an article here that was published in the Herald Sun titled "Prove Vaccination at Enrollment." Vaccine refusers are under pressure. Parents will have to provide proof of their child's immunization status to enroll them at school, and children will be sent for catch-up jabs if they are not fully vaccinated. Under a new national plan to lift immunization rates, parents will be warned if local immunization rates are too low to provide herd immunity from infectious diseases. Yes, that's right, you heard correctly. Herd immunity, ladies and gentlemen. The cattle have to be kept at the correct level of saturation in order to protect the rest of the cattle. The theory of herd immunity. I've discussed that in previous shows. I think it needs to be really, really addressed. I'd like to just do a whole couple of shows and maybe a whole month's worth of shows on this herd immunity concept. Of course, it really illustrates something about the way they perceive humanity, doesn't it? I mean, we are the herd. I'd love to know how many attendees of the Bilderberg conference have had their kids inoculated. Wouldn't that be an interesting statistic? Be really fascinating, wouldn't it? I'd like to know actually how many top-level CEOs, how many heads of banks, etc., etc., have actually had their kids fully immunised. I bet you might find it doesn't quite match up with what you've been told. In fact, I ought to make that an objective of this radio show, is to get information like that, because that information completely would blow a hole in the media propaganda, wouldn't it? I mean, we're talking about the absolute, creme de la creme of the elite. Anyway, just continuing with the article here. Health Minister Tanya Plibersek will ask state health ministers to sign up to this new policy on Friday at the Standing Council on Health in Sydney. Five states already have legislation requiring immunisation checks on school enrolment, but they are poorly implemented, and none require children to be sent for catch-up jabs. Now, a really important point to make here is when they say requiring children to be sent for catch-up jabs, it really sounds like, doesn't it? It sounds like you've got no choice here. It sounds like you're required. So okay, Johnny, you haven't had three out of the six jabs. You're going to have to go and get your catch-up jabs, you naughty little boy, right? In fact, it's not like that. In fact, in the next paragraph, it's actually completely contradicting what it said earlier. It said there would be no attempt to ban unvaccinated children from school, and parents who refused to vaccinate their children would not have to provide an exemption form. I don't think it's right to punish children for the decision their parents have made. But it said in the beginning here, the first paragraph, let me just read to you the first paragraph again. It says, parents will have to provide proof of their child's immunisation status to enrol them at school, and children will be sent for catch-up jabs if they are not fully vaccinated. Now, doesn't that sound to you like they're saying that vaccination is required and mandatory? I mean, that's what I get from it. I guarantee you that's what 99% of the unwashed masses who read these articles will think when they read that. And guess what, folks? That's what they want you to think. That, again, is mind control. See, there is actually a technical, legal, constitutional problem with making vaccine immunization mandatory. They can't actually technically do it because it is a violation of your rights, right? But they want you to think that you have to do it. So they play this game where they actually have double negatives in articles. And this cannot be a coincidence, folks. Like, this doesn't just happen by accident that an article is written in this way. The media organization, News Limited, which, as we've seen in previous shows, has very, very deep interconnections with the pharmaceutical giants, and particularly those pharmaceutical companies which are involved in manufacturing of certain vaccines, they want you to believe that you have to get the jabs. But Tanya Plibersek has said that it's not mandatory. So, okay, relax. It's not mandatory. That's the true story. That's the important information. Now, it says here, around 1.5% of children weren't immunized because of their parents objecting to vaccination. Only 1.5%. So it's an incredibly high percentage, isn't it? That's like 98.5%. She says here that forgetful parents are likely to get their children vaccinated if they're reminded about it on school enrollment. And that's about it for vaccine news this week. I will be continuing to bring you anything interesting that pops up on the feeds. It's an incredibly important story, incredibly important topic, as it seems to sort of draw together so many aspects of civil liberties that are being trodden on in our society. One last quick story on the Snowden affair again that I'd just like to run past you is that the Edward Snowden story is on the way to the big screen, and I found this incredible. And it does perhaps somewhat corroborate the creeping concerns expressed by Naomi Wolf, which I mentioned earlier in the show. The film, a film about the NSA and whistleblower Edward Snowden, is being planned along with a separate feature about Barack Obama's drones program. Hollywood is planning to bring a movie centering on the story of data snooping whistleblower Edward Snowden. Isn't that incredible? I mean, it's only been like a couple of weeks. Few details are available about the project. And there's another project apparently underway that is going to cover the topic of drone attacks. Snowden's story in particular has all the ingredients for a successful Hollywood political thriller. Intrigue, true life cachet, and a maverick central character willing to leave behind his girlfriend and go on the run from his own government in order to expose the truth. Yes, well, it does sound a little scripted, doesn't it? Well, anyway, I tend to take things at face value unless proven otherwise, and I still continue to say that the Snowden revelations are extremely important. I do hope we'll find out more. We'll be back right after the break with Josh Jackson, and we're going to be talking about privacy. Is privacy an expectation that is realistic in this present world? And indeed, what even is privacy? Stay with us. We'll be right back.